This is On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusa. Need something to do this summer? How about enjoying a good book? The Bitter Southerner magazine is here with its recommendations of 2018's best Southern books. On Second Thought's Virginia Prescott spoke with Chuck Reese and Kyle Jones of The Bitter Southerner.
Well, Kyle, let's start off with the book Visible Empire. This book was kind of sort of set in Atlanta.
It was. It kicks off in 1962. The Orly plane crash has just happened, and all these wealthy Atlanta patrons perish in a plane crash. And this, you know, obviously this actually happened, and all the characters in the book are left with to move through their grief, and it's everything. It's people have lost husbands and wives and brothers and parents and mistresses, and so two of the main characters, she is pregnant and her husband is in Atlanta, and his mistress has passed away. She worked for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The interesting thing about this book is that it is all the things we know and love. If you live in Atlanta, you know all these characters, or you know the places, you know the paper, you know the High Museum. I mean, it's interesting, and it makes you want to know more about that historical event.
Because these were art patrons, right? Mm-hmm. This was a very elite segment of mm-hmm. Atlanta culture. So how much of it is historical fiction and how much of it is real? Because there are survivors or families who lost people in that crash.
Right. I would call it historical fiction. It is a book that is based on that event. And when you read it, you're really trying to figure out who's who. But Ivan Allen, the mayor at the time, he has every other chapter where he argues with his wife. It's light. It's beach reading.
It's beach reading about an air tragedy.
I know. It doesn't sound right, but that's what it is.
So, Chuck, you chose something a little bit deeper. This is called The Fighter, and the author is Michael Ferris Smith?
Yeah, Michael Ferris Smith is a Mississippi writer, and I think he's maybe one of just the most skilled when it comes to good old-fashioned slinging of words and making beautiful sentences. He's probably one of the most skilled young writers working in the South.
What's
today.
The book about?
The book is about a young man whose name is Jack Boucher. And we meet Jack when he is 2 years old and dropped off with only a diaper and a bag at a Salvation Army. And in Tunica, Mississippi. And he goes on to earn his living as a fighter in backwoods cage matches.
Oof.
But the book is about the end of his career and his attempt to, before he gets out of the game, just to earn enough money to get the woman who adopted him and took him in and raised him back into her house and out of a nursing home because she's suffering from dementia and she's dying.
Oh, sounds like a pretty intense book.
It's a very intense book. But the thing about the way Michael writes these things is that he weaves the stories together so beautifully, speaks to, you know, the issues that plague rural communities, and he does it in a way that just keeps you popping right through.
Mm.
It's paced very much. It's like a fast-paced detective thriller, but it's not a detective thriller.
And you chose another book, Country Dark, that kind of picks up on those themes of problems plaguing rural populations.
There's a lot of good fiction that's set in Appalachia these days. And Chris Offutt was arguably one of the people who, you know, folks these days, you hear them talk about Appalachian noir as a genre.
Mm-hmm.
And arguably, Offutt was one of the early pioneers of that. He came out with a book of short stories back in 1992 called Kentucky Straight that just blew everybody away, won a bunch of prizes for it. But Country Dark is actually the first fiction he's published in 21 years. He's written a couple of memoirs. He's been writing for TV shows, Weeds on Showtime, and he wrote the two best episodes of True Blood, in my opinion, on HBO. But Country Dark is set, it moves from the mid-50s to the early 70s, and it's centered around a young veteran coming home from the Korean War and who winds up making a living in the moonshining business, thus gets put in jail, which makes it very hard for the young wife he married to raise the five kids that they have. And how they get through that is great. One thing I love about this book, too, is that Chris did something at the end of it that no author ever does anymore. The epilogue was written like one paragraph on every single major character in the book.
Oh, yeah, and like they've done in some films, right?
I love that. Me too.
Yeah, and I was like, it was just so satisfying to read that, you know, because you'd really gotten into the lives of all these people, and, you know, the story reaches its climax, but you know their lives go on, and to have a little hint at what happens is a lot of fun. I could talk forever about how happy I am at the kind, at the quality of writing coming out of people who grew up in the mountains like I did.
Both Chuck and I are from the mountains.
So we got like a little
bit
of, yeah.
Well, there's another book here, a little less heavy, but also dealing with some weighty themes, The Hidden Light of Northern Fires. Darren Wong is the author. We had Darren Wong on Second Thought to talk about his book. Now, this is what he had to say about his main character, Mary Willis.
She went away to college at Alfred University in 1857. She's about 18 years old at the time. Well, women did not go to college in 1858. She went to Alfred University, which was only the second school in the country to take women. It was Alfred is about 30 miles from Seneca Falls, New York, which is the epicenter of feminism.
So this is about the main character from the book, Mary Willis, Darren Wong talking there. Who wants to pick this one up?
Well, I like to think of Mary Willis as the anti-Scarlett O'Hara. I really do.
Because, how so?
Well, this book is in its own way sort of Gone with the Wind told from the other side.
Well, the interesting thing is it's about a northern town that was a holdout. It was a Confederate town in what, New York? Upstate
New York? They seceded, yeah.
That was true.
And that is true. And that's actually the town where Darren Wong grew up. But he's been living in the South for a long time now, and the fact that he wrote this book that is about whose main character is a young woman during the Civil War trying to keep her family farm operating. But unlike Scarlett O'Hara, I would argue that she has better intentions, because what she does is uses her barn as a place for escaped slaves to hide out before they can cross the river into Canada and freedom.
Kyle Jones and Chuck Reese are with me from The Bitter Southerner. We're getting their summer reading list. So let's get a little bit of a palate cleanser, can I say that, about Soul?
Some sherbet. okay, Soul, this book. Well, first of all, it's by Chef Todd Richards, who is a friend of The Bitter Southerner, and we love his food and have followed his career. But this book is gorgeous. It's called Soul, and it's Chef Todd Richards calls himself a preacher about food. And this book is divided into ingredients. And what he does is he takes the food of his ancestors and of his family, and he pushes the genre. And so if you've ever eaten at Richard Southern Fried in Crog Street Market in Atlanta, he serves collard green pho, or pho, however you say it.
Pho.
Pho. And in this book, we've got collard green ramen. I mean, he talks about Soul and the mashup of cultures that have created Soul and pushed it forward. Anyway, it's just beautiful. The photography is beautiful. The recipes are amazing. And it's soul food next level.
Right. Yeah. It's,
right?
It's kind of a challenging book, but what I like about it is that unlike most cookbooks, it really does reflect like the changing culture of this place in a way that you rarely see anybody write a cookbook to do.
One thing I love that he calls them the supposed tos.
What?
You know, like you're supposed to do such and such with collards or with peaches or whatever, and he's like, forget the supposed tos. That's like my new favorite term.
I like that for a cookbook. Uh-huh. So wait, you said challenging book. In what way?
Well, I just think that, you know, it's challenging that in that it's a reflection of his own experience. You know, people who grow up in the South on these sort of older, time-honored food traditions, when they move into the cities, you know, all these other cultural influences come in and they enrich Southern cuisine. But we tend to write most of our cookbooks about how to make a cat head biscuit. Nothing wrong with a cat head biscuit, but you see what I mean.
This is a deep cookbook, I think, is what Chuck is getting at. Like, he talks about that the more we understand each other's cultures and the more we bring all those people to the table, we understand each other through food. And it's what it's something the Bitter Southerners talked about since our first days.
Food and music, they're really good ways for people to talk to each other about difficult stuff.
Let's hear just a little bit from Todd Richards talking about the book on the podcast Folklore.
There's a French name on it, and we could charge X amount of dollars. And then if I did it, you know, just as an African-American chef, I can only charge X amount of dollars for it. So I was saying in the book that we have to move that equality and make sure that soul food is a recognized cuisine.
So this is the first time you all have included cookbooks on your Bitter Southerner reading list, right?
There was one before a couple of years ago. We did a cookbook about the history of Appalachian food called Victuals or Vittles. And that was an amazing book, but that's the only time we've ever done that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, until now.
What else have you got this time?
What else do we have this time? Oh, my God.
I'm seeing The Cooking Gene, which looked like a really interesting book to me.
And Turnip Greens and Tortillas.
All right.
Yeah.
It just keeps getting better.
Yeah.
Turnip Greens and Tortillas, for anybody, you know, anywhere there's a Taqueria del Sol location, you will appreciate this book because it will teach you how to make that wonderful queso. But that's another cross-cultural cookbook about Eddie Hernandez coming in and you know, establishing a distinctly Southern take on the food of his youth in Mexico. As for The Cooking Gene, it's not really a cookbook. Each chapter ends with a little recipe, but it's a book about the nature of Southern food.
Well, I think Michael Twitty asked some really interesting questions, it seems to me, about, like, who owns Southern cooking, which I think is something you at the Bitter Southerner have kind of taken on as a question.
Well, you know, he says in the book, the Old South is a place where people use food to tell themselves who they are, to tell others who they are, and to tell stories about where they've been. It is also a place in the mind where we dare not talk about which came first, the African cook or the European mistress, the Native American woman, or the white woodsman. Mm. And, you know, my takeaway from this book essentially is that the food of the South, you know, this idea of Southern food, which all of us revere so highly, is one of the most, if not the most, multicultural creation that the South has ever seen, and we actually did it in spite of ourselves. Mm,
that sounds a little like John T. Edge's book, right?
The Potlicker Papers.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, one of the things that people will see in our list is we do actually equate those two books. I think those two books, both of which came out last year, it's just that The Cooking Gene came out a good bit later and thus wasn't on our list last year. These are two books about food, but they're really two of the best histories of the American South that have come out in a while. And that's the way I look at them.
So, Kyle, you have a little bit more beach book or, let's say, hammocky book kind of read about food. This is Emily Nunn's book, The Comfort Food Diaries.
Yeah, I love this book. To me, I mean, she writes like a house on fire. It is not the typical beach book. It's a meaningful memoir where Emily Nunn, who, by the way, Chuck, she was at Georgia when we were there.
I believe so.
I know. I didn't know that. And it was interesting. I was reading this book, and then I got to some chapters where I knew people. I'm like, oh, my goodness. This book meant so much to me. She goes through a terrible breakup, and she creates the comfort food tour where she goes and reacquaints herself with old friends and family and works on a drinking problem along the way. I mean, you laugh and you cry, and I can't recommend The Comfort Food Diaries enough. It's awesome.
You also included a children's book or some YA fiction
for the first time, yeah.
So what have you got there?
Okay, the cutest book by one of our favorite illustrators, Natalie Nelson, along with the writer Kyle Lukoff, have created a storytelling of ravens, and it's all set around how do you say it, Chuck?
Veneries.
Veneries are the words for groups of animals. So it's just, it's darling. But did you know that?
No.
Did you know about these words?
Like, I know the words.
Yeah.
You know,
A flock
of seagulls.
Yes.
Not that we want to think of the band.
No,
right
we
now.
Don't. We don't want to discuss them.
but what is it for crows? Isn't it a fantastic
word? A murder of crows,
right.
A bloat of hippos.
Who knew?
A smack of jellyfish. I just like to say that. A smack of jellyfish.
A smack of jellyfish.
But it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And it's a children's book, but I'm putting it on my coffee table. I love it. It's so gorgeous.
Any more children's books?
We do have a couple of... we do have one YA novel on here, and
Amal Unbound.
Well, there's two. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Amal Unbound and Dear Martin by Nick Stone, which is a great piece of African American young adult fiction that has really gotten a wide audience in the last year. And he's a good Southern writer.
That's Chuck Reese and Kyle Jones of The Bitter Southerner. They spoke with On Second Thoughts' Virginia Prescott about the best Southern books of the year, and you can find their complete list at bittersoutherner.com.